Hey, and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. This is Willem Vanderhorst, your host for the show. We have a very exciting show today. We're coming up to the end of the season. I think I mentioned in the last couple of episodes, I'm going to be taking a break over the summer. I'll still be publishing a little bit over the summer, but I'm not sure exactly what kind of format. I'm going to be taking a break and figuring out, preparing slowly for the second season. One thing I'm doing, which for those who've listened, or if you went back to the very first episode of the podcast, you realize listening to the very first episode is like almost episode zero, origin episode. I had no music. I had no real idea. I mean, I had some ideas about what I wanted to do for the podcast, but I wasn't even sure it was going to be this kind of interview, conversation-based thing. And it was a panel with my friends Lauren, Adam, and James. And watch out, because like soon it's going to come up to the end of the season, and I have recorded a special season finale where I'm circling back with the same panel of people. And I'm mentioning this not only because, well, it's going to be a great episode coming up. That's next time, not this time, right? It's going to be a great episode coming up, and I'm starting to look for a few people who could join me, who might be interested in joining me and toying with the idea of doing something similar for the next season of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. I want to gather a panel of people who have listened to several episodes of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast and who listen to podcasts in general, ideally. Maybe somebody who's more into the gaming side of things, maybe another person who's more into the marketing side of things or branding slash strategy, design, and somebody who listens to just loads of podcasts, basically. That's my initial idea. It could be something else, but I'm mentioning it. If you're listening to this, it would be awesome to hear from you. Don't hesitate. Give me a shout. If you're interested in participating in a recording and an episode with me in a conversation that could be, well, either for like this recording for the second season or something else entirely. If you want to participate in an episode, just give me a shout. You can find all the details to contact me on the Ice Cream for Everyone website. That's at www.icecreamforeveryone.net, everything attached. So you can find all the episodes. You can find my Ice Cream Sunday newsletter. You can find more information about myself. You can send me an email. You can also find Ice Cream for Everyone on Facebook. If you go there or anywhere nearby, it'd be awesome if you can leave it a rating or review on your podcasting app. So that's on the iPhone podcast app or on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Give it a rating or review, or give me a shout on Twitter. On Twitter, I'm at HippoWill. That's like a hippo, but Will at the end. At HippoWill, you can follow me on Twitter. You can like my page on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. But onto today's episode, another panel for today. And I'm really grateful. This is awesome because as I explained during the episode, I have my friends from France join me for this episode. And this is going to be really interesting for people in the role-playing game scene in particular. So I participate in a French podcast called Les Voix d'Altaride that I've mentioned a few times, and Julien was joined me in a couple of other episodes as well. And this is a panel interviewing, or I mean, have a conversation with the voices from Altaride, or some of the voices from Altaride, the ones who could join me for this, Julien, Xavier, and Sandra. And it was so much fun, and like really grateful for them, and like thanking them so much because they are all French. They have a great level of English, but you know, it's not their first language. So I think it's awesome. So we had conversations about, you know, who they are, how they started, how Julien started his podcast, and how we contribute to his podcast, conversations we have on a regular basis. We talked about role-playing games from a French perspective. We talked about French role-playing games. So I think that's going to be particularly interesting to people who are English-speaking who might not know about a lot of French-speaking games. And we talked about whether is there a French touch in terms of tabletop role-playing games. And it was a lot of fun. It was a really great conversation. So I hope you have as much fun listening as I have had recording it. I have to say, by the way, actually talking about the recording, that was a bad recording day. I have to apologize in advance. Altogether, I think it's okay as usual. And it's so annoying because I'm apologizing for this kind of stuff very often. But it was a bad recording day. My Skype wasn't working properly. We had to switch over platforms. We like moved from Skype to Hangouts. We tried Blab, which wasn't working for some reason either. So Julien ended up recording us. Xavier's mic just like fades off from time to time. There's weird thumps occasionally. I've edited and cleaned most of it. So altogether, it's, you know, very well, I think it works. But if there's things that are a little bit annoying from a sound perspective, I really apologize. And I just bought some brand new material for the next season of the podcast. And I'm also super excited. By the way, I forgot about that. I'm going to the States very soon, and I'll be attending the Podcast Movement Conference in Chicago. So if ever you're listening to this and you're a gamer, gaming podcaster, or of any kind, and you'll be in Chicago, or even just listening to this podcast wherever you are, if you're going to be in Chicago for the Podcast Movement Conference, very exciting. Kevin Smith is opening it. Alice Bloomberg is going to be in the closing keynote. A bunch of other podcasts are going to be there. Tanya DePass, that I interviewed for the podcast, and her podcast, Fresh Out of Tokens, are going to be around there. Caitlin Prest and Mitra Kovalee from The Heart are doing some sessions that I'll be very excited. I hope to say hi to them. It's one of my favorite podcasts. Check out The Heart. It's not a gaming podcast at all, by the way, but it's a great podcast. It's really, really beautiful audio storytelling about intimacy, love, relationships, sex. Anyway, a completely different topic. So that was a shameless plug. Anyhow, on to more gaming podcasts, gaming-related podcasts with my friends in France. Les Voix de l'Altaride. Enjoy. Welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast, and this is a collaboration with my friends in, well, Paris and different various parts of France in, well, Nantes, actually, in the case of Xavier.
Yes.
Les Voix d'Altaride, and that's the Julien's podcast that we talk about role-playing games, tabletop role-playing games in France, and I thought it'd be awesome to invite you guys to join the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast in English and introduce my friends to other people who listen to the podcast normally, and also have a group of French players talk about, you know, the French style or whether there's a French touch of playing tabletop role-playing games to English-speaking listeners.
I don't know if there's a French touch, but we will try to at least talk in comprehensible English to your audience.
Yes. Yes. So we have Julien. Julien's just spoken. And then we also have Sandra.
Hi.
And we also have Xavier.
Hello.
Everybody. Guys, you want to do the round of the table? Introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about, you know, who you are, what you do for a living, and maybe how you got into tabletop gaming.
That would be long, you know. But
that's okay. We do have a whole hour conversation.
Okay,
that's the whole idea.
Okay, so my name is Julien. I'm from Paris, actually, and I'm living here. I'm a teacher, a chemistry teacher, to be exact. And I've discovered RPGs, tabletop RPGs, maybe when I was 8 years old, at school, actually. As I've already said in French, the first time I played in a tabletop RPG, I didn't understand very well what was going on. But I kept an impression of awesomeness that never left me after that. I waited for a few years before I played again. Even tried to enlist my family, father, mother, and brothers. It never worked really well, but after that I met some friends, and I'm playing since, maybe, I think I'm playing for 25 years or something.
Yeah. I think this is Xavier, we can hear you breathing a little bit in your mic.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. You want to go next, or Sandra? Ladies first, whichever.
Ladies first, as usual.
Oh, that's so nice of you. As usual. So my name is Sandra. I live in Paris. I'm working in the telecom networks. Telecom mobile network, more precisely. Mm-hmm. And I'm playing role-playing games since I was 8 years old. Mm. I was a little girl. I was a table and I see the light, and never did. I love so much when rolling the dice and socializing with people. Mm. And I relate to Xavier speaking. We all know Xavier has never anything to say.
Never. It's a private joke within the Voix d'Altaride podcast. I'm always saying, oh, I don't have a clue about tonight, I'm not really sure. And I'm one of the podcaster you can't shut up.
Yeah.
So I've been playing role playing games for more than 30 years.
Yeah.
It helped me not do brilliant studies, but I learned English, I learned many silly things, and I couldn't really quit playing. I have to say also that I met many wonderful people, like Willem, Julien, Sandra, and I'm really happy to speak to you tonight. Really, talking to you guys in English feels a little bit unusual.
Yeah, but it's part of the fun. I'm really glad that you guys are participating and jumping in. Sorry?
Probably. Well, I haven't finished with them yet.
I'm sorry.
A big D&D player, and I've been brought in the Indies maybe 5 or 6 years ago when I went to work in Paris, and where I met Julien Sommer.
Yeah. We'll come back to explaining the difference between like Dungeons and Dragons and indie games. But we'll come back to that. I just wanted to talk about the fact. So the podcast that we participate in, Julien's podcast, is Les Voix d'Altaride. And so the voices of Altaride. So I just wanted to start with my, like, setting on, you know, who, what is Altaride and who are the voices and why does he need so many of them?
All right. Altaride is actually a gaming world that was created by Benoît Chirel, who's not here tonight. He couldn't be here because of the rain and the train and the problems in France right now. You know, strikes and so on. That's a bit cliche.
But the problems in question I think we're talking about are there's some flooding, right? They're like heavy rains and flooding.
There are trees that have collapsed on the train tracks and so on.
Yeah.
So Benoît created a while ago a gaming world, a fantasy world that was called Altaride. And the first time we spoke about Altaride was when we decided to publish a monthly webzine that was called Chronique d'Altaride, the Altaride's Chronicle.
Okay.
And then the webzine was still running when I decided to take everything on the podcast. So I thought about making a podcast for a few months and a few years, I think, and the opportunity presented itself. So I launched the podcast with Xavier, Sandra, Benoît. Then Willem, you came at the rescue
to help exactly us. The rescue.
No, not exactly at the rescue, but you came to participate in me very often.
No, absolutely, and it was a pleasure. I mean, you were quite, I think, instrumental in me starting my own podcast as well, because just when I moved from Singapore to France, and I was kind of thinking of doing a show or something, and I had done some video tests with a friend in Singapore, and you were thinking and working on preparing for this podcast, where we caught up and we hadn't seen each other in a very long time. Because just for the background, Julien and I, that's the first connection, and then you introduced me to Xavier and Sandra, and I met you through a common friend when we used to play a lot of role-playing games and Vampire the Masquerade live-action role-playing in and around Paris when we were, you know, in our early 20s, basically.
Yeah, I think that was maybe 20 years ago.
So. Yeah.
We're not getting younger.
Yes, long time ago. And so, so you were at that time, and that's what introduced me to this idea of kind of discussing the mechanics of role-playing games and just examining and talking about the theory of role-playing games and the theory of game design altogether.
Yeah. We talk, we usually select a topic for each episode, and in each episode we talk about game theory, games in general, and everything around the tabletop hobby.
Mm-hmm. And so you were already listening to quite a few tabletop podcasts, or how did you get into listening to gaming podcasts or podcasts altogether?
A while ago, I was playing very, very frequently World of Warcraft. Uh-huh. And I started, while playing, listening to podcasts about this game. The first one was The Instance, a podcast made I've forgotten the name, but from California, I think. And and a French podcast that was called Azeroth.fr at mm-hmm. the time. And then when I listened to every episode there was of these shows, I thought, it's quite silly. I'm really into role playing games and I don't listen to any podcast about role playing games. So I went on the hunt for a good RPG podcasts and I mm-hmm. found some. So ever since I've been listening to many podcasts, to name a few, the Happy Jacks RPG podcast or Misdirected Math podcast, what else?
Tabletop Superhighway.
Tabletop Superhighway recently. The Gencast. I've listened to.
I haven't listened to that one yet. I'll have to check it out.
The Gencast. You must learn. You must listen to it. It's very good. To the One Shot podcast also. An actual play from Knights of the Night, I think. Mm-hmm. Many others. Basically, I listen to everything I can find on the internet.
Yeah,
that's about role playing games.
Xavier and Sandra, did you also listen to a few podcasts before joining this one, or not so much?
Well, I started maybe 4 or 5 years ago listening to French podcasts, one especially called La Cellule. One or two months ago in April, I came back to North. Now I have a long trip to go to work, like an hour and a half. So I'm very in listening to podcasts, the same one Julien talked about just a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
But before that, I was only listening to French ones.
Mm-hmm.
My discovery of the American ones are quite new, maybe 2 or 3 months at most. But it's very interesting.
Cool. And you, Sandra? Same or?
Yeah, almost same here. I was listening to La Cellule. I think it's one of the oldest and...
In French, anyway.
And most famous French podcast about RPG.
Mm.
And I was listening to one or two other, and I believe no more than 2 or 3, maybe 5 American podcasts essentially. But when Julia asked me to participate in... sorry.
I see. You okay?
Thanks. Asked me to participate in the Altered podcast, I begin to listen to about every podcast I can find.
Yeah.
I have hours on the road, so I totally listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah. What Sandra is not telling us now is that when she was young at school, she actually did a radio show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When I was in primary school, about between 7 and 10 years old, I was a journalist, a child journalist.
Yeah.
It was on national radio.
Okay.
And it's a radio was still exist in France. It's called Radio Cartable. And was on the national radio, it was called Radio Libertaire.
Uh-huh.
And every Thursday, it was Shield Day, where all children from a French primary in Paris, and we were doing, I don't know how this is that, but interview.
So you record new in the primary school? News coverage, okay.
But, for example, Salon du Livre, a very uh-huh. famous book show. We were interviewing a famous young author.
Okay, cool.
And young writer.
Oh. And you did that every week?
Yes. And we were about 15 young people in the radio. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have a teacher of supervision. But yeah. We were like, people left us pretty free. If we wanted to cover a subject, we can't.
Yeah. Well, did you remember a favorite subject topic that you covered while you were doing radio as a child?
We did, I did an interview of Hugo Frey, a French singer.
Okay.
And an interview of Henri Dess, another French singer for young.
Yeah, very famous French singer for young people, sings a lot of kids' songs, yeah.
Yeah. So, and
I'll add all the information.
Another two mm-hmm. auteur jeunesse français.
Cool.
It was
very, very cool.
We did, if I remember, some École des fans auteurs.
Okay, which was, so the École des fans, just for context, is a TV show. So it's a talent contest. Does that still exist? By the way, we watched that when we were kids. It was a Sunday afternoon where kids would come on and sing songs for their parents. That's pretty much it, right?
It was on for so many years.
Maybe very long
30 or 40 years in a row. But it's not anymore on live.
Yeah. I'll add links to the show notes. And if you want to check it out, I'll probably like find some YouTube, old YouTube videos of the French singing talent contest for kids.
They were singing for an audience, but they were also singing for a famous singer that was there at the show. And they were singing his song or her songs.
Every week was a different guest. And
Got it. Okay, cool. All right, great. Thank you for that. That was a really very, very cool intro. Let's see, what else I was talking about? I thought it would be a good opportunity. Actually, this is the question I had in mind. I lost my train of thought. Sorry, guys. But as we were talking about the kind of podcast we listen to and the fact that we have this show, that Julien has this show that we joined, where we're talking about the game mechanics and like philosophy behind gaming and things like that. And when I remember when I talked about it with some other people, and even people who play role-playing games, it's not something that is interesting to everyone. Like, there's a lot of people that kind of just go, like, I'm not really interested in talking about the why, where, or where the games are coming from. I just play with my friends and that's it. So why do you think that is, that we're a group of people, or what does it take to have that kind of interest to discuss, I don't know, the behind the scenes of how a game is made or played or what happens in the rules, or without being pretentious, of course, but I think it's kind of interesting that it's interesting to some people, but not everyone.
Yeah, I think that actually it takes a kind of passion for the game. When you play every week for so many years, maybe twice or three times a week, sometimes you have a few games that aren't so great. So you try to understand why these games fail. And that's one of the reasons we try to understand how games work. And the other reason for me is that I've always wanted to write games. First, I did that using a very traditional method. You create a world, then you think about maybe a system, some rules, and then you play with your friends. But a few years back, I was introduced to different games. I think that what Xavier was calling indie games. Sooner. And these games, they take really another point of view on the way to make games, and they think about the way they make games and what, principles of game design you can apply to these creations. Mm-hmm. And I must say that, as I said, I'm a teacher, a chemistry teacher with a university background. So I've always tried to understand the world around me, and to understand the way games work, as I've spent so many hours in my life playing, is something that's maybe I could, I don't know. It's kind of like when you really, really like a book or a movie, you try to analyze it to understand why you like it so much.
Yeah.
So I think that's my point of view on the subject.
Yeah. How about you, Xavier or Sandra? Do you have anything to add to that? Or how is it for you?
Sure, I can go on. I've always been curious. All of my life is about curiosity. and have been collecting role-playing games since the beginning almost. I was quite in the system at first, but I discovered that its system is more than just rolling dice and adding numbers. And system can also be a way to enhance the story you are talking. What I was told by these indie games and the Forge in general. Well, playing with Julien and talking about it, the thing is, we were having a campaign together and at friends, and we were coming back in the metro, and we started talking about theory at that time, I think. So naturally, when Julien said, "Okay, I'm gonna have a podcast," I was like, "Oh, great! I want to be one of your co-hosts." And I love talking about theory, and especially role-playing games theory. My daughter is saying that I have a theory for everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, she might be too on that one. So it feels kind of natural to just think about what we are doing, how we are doing it, and why, and how we can improve our way of playing, or just. And I'm curious. Even games I don't like, I can play them just to see how it works.
Yeah,
how other people could like it. I don't, but I want to understand.
Yeah. How about you, Sandra?
I just love playing. And it's something I think is really, it's helped to open to the world. And I love to DM for new players and make people discover role-playing games.
Yeah.
I love thinking about how a game works too. Why does the system matter or not? Mm. Why does the fluff matter or not?
You're going to have to explain fluff and system a little bit.
Yeah, I will let Xavier explain that in the thing about the fluff.
I hate fluff.
I love to convert people to my dice religion. I play with children.
Yeah.
I play with disabled people, blind and deaf, and I love to see how Sphere can help people to be more social, more open, to be more sure while speaking, to search a book for a historical fact about why does the crypt of Notre Dame is here in Paris. Because if you vampire, you play a vampire, who will use this historical fact?
Mm. Yeah, so it's an access to a lot of different things in it. Mm-hmm. And it's great to hear you mention that, because I think it's something that I really appreciate in our conversation so far for the podcast. And it's really interesting that you take a lot of time to go do these like first beginners, games for either children or people who've never played or, people that are specifically disabled, like the blind and deaf people that you play with, which I thought was fascinating, particularly like the group of deaf people that you're playing with must be really interesting because most of the means that we have to play are storytelling. So we're talking and it's very oral. So, you know, it's conversation based. So I was wondering, can you tell us an anecdote of what you had to realize or change in your style of playing and or leading a game for people who are deaf?
Yes, because, for deaf people, I don't sign. So, I did have three more people who can sign in the room. Because if the player wanted to speak together and I need to describe a fact, I need someone who can sign, who can translate to me after.
Right.
And, we need to know that most of role-playing games, vocabulary doesn't exist in a sign language. You can't say dragon, but you can say gelatinous cube. You can say tarwask. You can say I don't know.
Half the monsters that are in Dungeons and Dragons.
Half the monsters of Dungeons and Dragons don't have eyes, are not eye cell friendly. So it, I didn't choose to play a contemporary RPG. And it was more easy, but even like that description, for example, I love to describe a room to show to my player where they are. I did wrote a description way before and send it to the translators.
Right.
And did same when I asked them to. Because if I did speak and did cross-like
on the spot,
on the spot, it was way too difficult for them. It's a totally a new way from DMing. And I think it's really, really interesting. It forced me to break my limits, to see where I can go with my style of DMing.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
You'll have understand that Sandra is our real hero on the podcast. The real star.
Absolutely.
Yes, sure.
Xavier, can you explain to us, like, so tell us a little bit just quickly, and for the people who listen who might not know too much about role-playing games, system versus fluff, what do we mean? What is it?
Okay.
you love talking about the fluff. I know you love the fluff.
Yeah. There's two big category of rules. You have on one hand, I'd say the system, which describes if you are doing something, what you must do in real life, which dice you roll, what skills you, skill points you add to see if you succeed or not in what you are doing in the story. That's what most of the time we call system. And on the other side, you have the description of the world we are playing in. And that's what we call fluff.
Yeah.
And I pretend to be against fluff, in the Voix d'Altaride, because I kind of think that it's easy to just sell tons of, books about fluff, about description of the world. And I tend to think that it's, one of the, point of playing is to build our own world. So if you get one sold, you're just missing half the fun of role playing. So that's why I pretend that fluff is crappy and you don't need fluff and fluff sucks and so on. But I have to admit that I was really influenced by some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Even today, I keep on having good time reading fluff. I won't admit it on the web altered, but yeah, I can say.
People are probably going to be listening.
People won't listen to this anyway.
You do know I'm recording right now.
Yeah, and we can all say, you did lie to us.
Yeah. We can also play it. Julien can play it during another episode, and just to remind you.
I think it's quite easy to write tons of things about the world, but having a good system that works really well, that is friendly, that is fast pacing while playing, that is technically interesting in a tactical way, is very difficult. Writing lines and lines and lines and lines about what color is the queen's underwear. I don't fancy that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the differences between the way we play in France and the way the rest of the world plays.
Oh, perfect. I was just going to ask about that.
Yeah. You see, here in France, when we start campaign, usually we use a setting that is already written by someone else. World building is not as common as what of the impression I have from the US podcast. Of course, I've never played in the US or in the UK, but when I listen to podcasts, I'm under the impression that every group, starts by doing a world building phase before starting a campaign. Most often it's the GM that builds the world in which he wants to play. But in France, I must say that we quite like using the work of other writers.
It's an interesting point, actually. It's true that in the podcasts I've listened to and the people I've talked to in the UK, and I've not done too much playing around here, I have talked to quite a few people who had their own universes that just take another rule system and then, you know, created their own world with their own friends or their own little homegrown games. Although when I was in the south of France last year, I did meet, there were several groups of people that had their own games that they were creating, that they were slowly working on, and that actually a couple of them became games that were very successfully crowdfunding, like Insectopia.
Yeah, they were building their games to publish them. That's different from building a world and organizing a game just for your gaming group. You see?
Well, they've been playing it for over 10 years, and they didn't think they're going to publish it at first.
Uh huh. Okay.
That's the point. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, of course. I don't say that there's no world building at the tables in France, but when I played in RPG clubs when I was younger, most of the games that were hosted were games from books that were written by other writers. When we played Vampire the Masquerade, for example, usually we picked up a city book to play in and use the NPCs, all the story that's inside the book.
Yeah.
And we also had a few of these books that were written by French people, for French people.
Yeah.
In French, actually.
I think that's a really interesting point, and we could just open it, everything that we're talking about. If there's any other, you know, gaming podcasts out there that listen to this or that, you know, want to talk about it and have a bit of an international conversation on, I guess, gaming culture.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. Like, what else do you guys think is particular to the French gaming culture? And I don't, we might say different, but we don't know if it's different or not. But let's say what you think are important elements of French gaming culture or French tabletop role-playing game culture.
Mm. In the 90s, we always had something, the players said. That was that the system didn't matter at all. You could play without rules, almost without rules. That's, the role-playing aspect was important. The intrigue was important. I don't know if that's French or not, but when I listen to the other podcast, the system is always very present. So, I don't know. What do you think about it?
Xavier just went on mute. Yeah.
Well, that's me. I was very frustrated by, French creation, RPG creation during the 90s, because they were really focusing on fluff and story and not the system, and I have always loved the system. System is my thing. And I had very nice worlds with crappy system, and it was really frustrating to me.
Right.
And if it's the French touch,
I don't know.
But maybe you know that obtuse, pompous French saying to be told the fantastic. Well, I think it's quite true. We talk a lot. We think we are so smart. And sometimes we miss the point.
Yeah, we used to say.
My taste, anyway.
We used to say that some of these authors, RPG authors, should have written a book,
rather
than a game.
Right. So actually, the game book is too much about like trying to be a novel and not enough about the game system to be played by other people.
That's it.
But it used to be true. It's really not that way anymore.
So do you have an example of a French game? Because we can talk about a few French games that people who listen who are English speaking might not know about. So, we can name and shame. What would be an example of a 90s French game that is more of the type that you were thinking of, that's kind of very story and, but, you know, not really much meat on the bones, I guess.
I'd say Gilda.
Okay. I don't agree with you.
All right, good, interesting. So we're like, let's describe what Guild is. And
A Guild is a game about the exploration of a new continent that has emerged at in the sea far away from what stands for Europe. And that's a continent with filled with magic. And you play explorers who go to this continent to try to understand and to exploit the magic there.
Yeah. So what's your point of view, Xavier? Why do you think
the system is crappy? You roll two dice and it never works and it's
Because I had the game and I really enjoyed it. I think I only played it once. So I don't really have much of an opinion at the time about the system itself.
Actually, I really enjoy the fluff. It's very interesting. The different races you can play are really nice. And I'm just out of the game every time I roll dice because I find it so crappy. And I'm like, okay. I need the system to tell me what I can do or what I can't.
But do you think this was a game that you didn't like the system, or it didn't have enough? It didn't have any substance to the game.
Oh, that's a system matter to me.
Okay.
The game. I'm interested in the game. Really, I have it on my collection, but. But I just can't play Guild with the Guild system. I can't.
Okay. So what's your point of view, Julien?
I think the system may not be the best, but I don't think Guild is at the level some other games are. You see, the system is quite simple. It's not maybe it's not very good, but there is a system.
And yeah, because from what I remember, it didn't feel like you can criticize the system itself, but I didn't remember it as only fluff, or a lot of fluff, actually. There was some description, but.
And I don't remember it as broken, as Xavier said, but maybe I didn't play it enough. That's possible. Because I've only played maybe two or three games of Guild.
Exactly the same. Sandra, did you play that game at the time?
I did play other game, but when I was young, in the 19, I was more into Dungeon and Dragon.
Okay.
Yes.
I was thinking about other games. I don't know if you know this game, but Scales. Do you know Scales?
Scales.
Heard of, but never played.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never played it. I really wanted to play it, though.
Oh, but,
can you describe it for people?
I guess you can't really play it with its rules. So that was more of these kind of games that I was thinking about.
Why can't you play with the rules?
Because the rules are crappy. They don't work. And I'm calling.
Do you have an example for anybody?
Yeah. In Scales, you play a reincarnated dragon and a few magical creatures around him. So in the world, the dragon creates some kind of magical field around him, and he starts as a human with a few powers. And his entourage is slowly beginning to transform into their true forms, and their true forms are magical creatures.
Okay.
The main problem of the game for me was that the dragon was very, very powerful at start, and his followers were very weak. So you had a real imbalance in the gaming group, and the game didn't give you anything to play with that imbalance. It's not always important to have all the players play a character of the same power.
Mm-hmm.
But in this game, it didn't work. So
right. So you had because of, like, the way that you're describing it. So one person was one of the players.
Yes.
were the dragon.
Yes,
and the other players.
That's it.
Right.
And I think it's symptomatic of many French games at the time. You had a beautiful book, and maybe that's one other point of the French touch in RPGs.
the books we had were very, very beautiful, with illustrations, hardbacks, and such things.
Yeah, absolutely.
The book was wonderful. The fluff, the universe, the world was wonderful. But it seems like the authors only had a few pages to describe the rules of the game. So the rules, I guess they said, what rules can we put on this system, this game? Pick the first idea they had, and didn't even test it before publishing the book.
Actually, I think I have an example on the same lines. Do you remember a game called Retro Future? Retro Future.
I can't remember the system of Retro Future.
Well, it was super weird. I don't remember everything of it because I pulled it out of my boxes when I was in France last year, and it was like that example. Really beautiful book. The setting was, imagine, you know, how people imagined the future to be in the 1950s.
With a real Dark Cadillacs. City. You know, the movie Dark City.
Yes, the movie Dark City, exactly. The movie Dark City by Alex Proyas is a very good example of what they were trying to do. So it looks like the 50s, but it's the future. There's like flying Cadillacs, old Cadillacs, and it's like dystopian future, a bit mixed between also 1984 and like Dark City, the movie, which is a great movie. Mm-hmm. And the rule system was, so the one thing was the layout. There were beautiful illustrations, thick paper, thick book, hardcover, but the layout of the book made it that all the writing was slanted and diagonal. Mm-hmm. So it kind of looked cool when you looked at it, but when you were reading it, it was really, really, really tiring and really tedious to be reading it. Because you had to kind of turn the book around or turn your head around when you're reading. That's one. And two, they had this system of rules that I never really understood if it was a good idea. It was just weird. You could add adjectives to describe actions, and each character had, there was no numbers. So you could say, okay, well, I have a gun and I'm agile and I am courageous, something like that. I can't remember. So to make actions, you had to string up words together. And the more words you had, the more chance you had of succeeding your action, I think. Mm-hmm. So you had just a lot of different words and adjectives and verbs, and it was kind of confusing, essentially. That's the way I remember it. So there might be, I can't remember if it was a good idea or a bad idea, but it was very difficult to get my head around, anyway.
Let's quit talking about crappy French game. I'd rather talk about the ones that really.
I don't think the game was crappy entirely, though. Sorry, but I agree. But I agree. We should talk about good games, good French games.
You do have your examples to explore.
Yeah, I wanted to say that I did play in French. We seem to love funny games.
Uh-huh.
In 90, I did play to ENSMV.
Yeah.
It was a famous parodical game where you can choose to play an angel or a demon.
In English, it was translated into In Nomine by Steve Jackson Games.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So one of the rare French games to be translated.
Yeah, but it was not the same game. You lost, I guess you lost many of the, of the parody of the game. In the English version, it was much more occult game than funny game.
Okay. Sorry, so yeah, Sandra, go ahead.
And the other game was BitTube by the same author of Ian's Envy. It was a post-apocalyptic game when a heli comet was near the Earth in 1986, and we play in France in a
post-apocalyptic.
And it was like a Mad Max, but Mad Max on crack. And I really love this game.
I did. There is a bit of over-the-top humor, actually. It makes me think of, and this is, I don't know, like there must be some other people who find it, but you know the kind of very dark humor that we can appreciate in France, with movies like, do you remember Bernie in the 90s?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
And even, so it was translated, C'est arrivé près de chez vous, which was translated as Man Bites Dog, which is a Belgian movie, but that kind of movie, like, for example, I showed one of my best friends, in England when I was living there years ago, Bernie, and he just did not find that
out.
It's not find that funny at all.
That movie is hilarious.
It is hilarious, but he was like, "You find that funny? You people are sick. You French people are sick."
We are sick. So let's talk about good French games.
Yes.
So,
well,
so
what are examples of good French
games? Give me yours.
That's quite hard. Maybe the one I love the most, it's an old game, that's called Nephilim. Nephilim was translated also in English, and I don't know if the English version gave it justice or not, but that's one of the most interesting games I've played. But not for the system, purely for the universe, because the system was...
The system is okay. It's okay.
Well, because they use the Chaosium system, which is the same as Call of Cthulhu.
Yes.
It's quite an okay system.
Yeah, it works. It's not wonderful, but it works.
Quite okay.
So that's one game. I'll give you a few more later. After the others.
Can you tell us a little bit about Nephilim?
Nephilim is a game when you play an immortal being. An immortal incorporeal being that reincarnates into human bodies throughout history to search for his former glory. And the way to achieve some kind of ascension is to learn about the occult in the world. So that's a game when you can use everything that was written about the occult in the real world to play with. The game, one of the first gaming books, you had the map of a cathedral. And using only the map of a cathedral, you could play the game. And you could, I don't know.
Like find symbols.
Yeah, find symbols and, get to the end of the story just using the map and the real world occultism.
Yeah. I remember, and there was something I really liked because it was one of my favorite games as well. And I remember the character creation was really interesting because you created your character and you kind of lived through different eras or times in the history of humanity where your character awoke and it gave you different kinds of experiences to build over time. So, like, you could decide that, you know, you had a period where your immortal being was awake and it was the Roman times, and then you come back in the Middle Ages in a different country, and depending on where you lived and what you were doing, you have different skills, different memories as well.
So, let's hear about the games from Xavier and Sonor.
Sure.
I go first, and one game I'm really fond of is Miles Christie.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite an old game. It's a game from the 90s, and you play Templars in the realm of Jerusalem during the Crusades.
Okay.
It sounds like an historical game and could be. But most of all, it's a moral game because you have so many rules to follow. You can't quit the suit. You can't draw your weapon whenever you feel like. You have to watch for Christians and not harm them. You have to be true to your vows. You have to obey. It's really tricky. Because at the end of each game session, you have to confess your sins.
Mm.
And you are always struggling with everything you should do and you can't because you have this woe and this woe. And if you do that, break this. It's very, very...
We're losing you, Xavier.
Yeah. I don't know why you just go randomly on mute. Is it your mic or?
Oh, sorry. No.
No, sorry.
So, can you just when did you lose me?
You're explaining that. So, at the end, you have to
confess what you did. Session.
Okay.
And everything you do is potentially against your rules. So you are always struggling between doing what should be done and doing what you have to do because of the
unmute again.
Okay. Yeah, you're mute again. Okay, let's go to Sandra.
Sorry, exactly. Wow,
good. Désolé.
I'm into a more recent game.
Okay.
But I will begin by a really old game called Where's the Dragon?
Yes.
It's a game. The beginning is the world is dreamed by dragon. Mm. The dream is omnipresent. And it's really hard to distinguish a dream from reality. Mm. And each dragon dream about a figures. But every dragon dream about the world in common. And when the figures played by the characters die, the dragons wake up. And it's really a nice game. It was, it's an empirical game.
Yeah, I've never played it. I've always wanted to play. It's what, when I learned about role-playing games, the Rêve de Dragon already had a mystique around it and a huge reputation for both being very difficult to play, that like, you know, at least the rumors from people I knew at the time I was quite young. So it was always said and kind of whispered that, oh, this is the best game ever. But you need to be like really experienced to play it and find somebody really experienced to play it correctly and that kind of stuff.
Because it's a role-playing inside a role-playing game. It's a metaphor about the role-playing game. You incarnate a dragon. So it's the first level of role-playing. But the dragons incarnate another figure which every dragon around the table dream about the same world. Mm. The poor, I don't know how to say it, but mise en abîme.
Yeah. I think that's actually used in English.
Yeah. So it's, you play inside the play. And when you are beginning in role-playing game, it's be quite difficult to take in hand the concept. But it's a really nice game. Cool. And I did love to play co-ops too. It's a funny game when you play co-ops, or maybe we call that loser co-ops. And I did like to play Pavillon Noir.
Hmm?
Yeah, pirates.
Yeah, pirates.
And Dark Earth. And another post-apocalyptic world. And more recently, I did like the world of Esterain, who was translated in English and did have,
crappy system also.
Also a crappy system. I've never played it.
A crappy system, but a nice fluff.
Yeah, that's about it. If you want to know.
And even with a crappy system, if I don't say anything wrong, it did win an Annie Award in this translation.
Well, yeah, it did win Annie, and it was translated, and so people could find Shadows of Esterain. They've been promoting. I was at Dragon Meet last year, and the game designer and his agent were there. I didn't get to meet them, actually, but
That's,
you know them, right?
That's really the archetypal role-playing game from the 90s. Beautiful books, beautiful illustrations, a world that's quite interesting, but the rules just don't follow up on the game.
Right.
Well, that's my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my
opinion. I did a campaign of Shadow of Esterain. I did love the illustration and the fluff. But unfortunately, when you did pass 5 or 6 sessions, you see that the system doesn't work. It doesn't work with you. It works against you, even if you're the DM.
Really?
Okay.
Okay.
So, to quote a game about the other side of the spectrum, more of an indie game, I would quote the work of Thomas Meunier, who's an author that we talk about very often on the Valentine podcast.
Yeah.
And maybe one of his last games that's called Dragonfly Motel that was made for the Game Chef of last year. And that's a game when you abandon almost entirely logic to play in a kind of a David Lynch movie.
Oh, cool.
using music, using a few set of rules that are really, really immersive play. That are also really immersive play. And you can play with it in a way that we call mindfuck. That is, you really don't... you shouldn't expect logic or coherency or anything like that in the game. It's really, really a good experience.
Okay, I'll have to check it out. I've not played. And actually, a Game Chef is just coming up, right? Which is a game design competition.
Yeah, absolutely. It begins on, I guess, it's Friday.
Yeah, so I think by the time this is published, I'm not sure. I think it's going to be published a little bit later, but the... But I'll put the links if the competition is still up.
The competition lasts for 9 days, so.
Oh, so it's only 9 days. I think this will be published by then. But you're going to be participating again, Julien, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to be participating.
I'm going to look at the rules. Is the brief already out?
No. It will be out only when the contest begins.
You probably can find the brief from previous years on April.
Unmute again.
I don't really know what's going on with your mic, Levy. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll listen then.
Okay. No, you can talk, but maybe it's not properly plugged into your computer.
Well,
like
I did nothing more, nothing less. It's just my.
Okay.
Last question, and then we'll move on to the conclusion. But what do you, if anything, what do you think, if there is a French style or your style of playing games, what do you think can be beneficial for the English style or American style of playing games or foreign style of playing games, role-playing games, of course, or vice versa? What do you think the French people can learn more of from the English-speaking and vice versa?
I guess the ideas about role-playing from the English-speaking world are already there. We read English books.
We read them, we listen to them.
Yeah. So I don't know if we still have to learn, because we already have learned about what's happening on the other side of the sea.
Okay, so maybe there's something the other way around then.
The other way around, I really don't know. I haven't played with UK gamers or US gamers or actually gamers from any other part of the world. So I really can't say what we can bring to the table. Maybe a few years back, I would have talked about the beautiful books we produced here. But now, if you look on what Kickstarters are allowing in terms of books, I guess we've been completely, if not, I don't know.
Not bested, or at least there's some beautiful books coming out.
Yes, bested, or maybe not bested, but at least equaled. At least.
Yeah, sure. Any other ideas for you, Sandra or Xavier?
Oh, no. I'm listening to actual play, and it sounds really like what we are doing here in France.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure that is...
actually, I have an idea.
Okay.
When I'm listening to many US podcasts, I'm under the impression that the themes that you can play with are maybe a bit more free here in France. We can talk about almost everything without taking much precaution before talking about it. You know, we never use trigger words or such things in France. Maybe it's not good. Some people use the X card and all these devices to assure the safety around the table. But safety is...
Just to make sure, so this is the kind of mechanics where people are allowed to say they're not comfortable with what's being talked about.
Yeah, that's it.
Right?
That's it.
Yeah.
I don't know if we don't use it because we don't need it or because we don't we aren't enough considerate about the other players around the table, but I guess sometimes the games we play are how to say that, not more adults, but
we play unsafe.
Yeah, we play much more.
Well, there's a lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, or no, horror.
There can be. Yeah, take for example the game Sandra was talking about, that is Innominé.
Mm-hmm.
In In Nomine, you play in a satirical way demons and angels, and we laugh about it. If you want to maybe something like In Nomine, you can see the movie Dogma. Yeah. I don't know if you remember it.
Yeah,
that's quite like that. So we can laugh about religion. We can laugh about everything. And usually it's never starts problems at the table. So I don't know if it's a good thing or not a good thing, but maybe it's different.
That's an interesting point. All right, cool. Cool. Certainly hope you can decide. Anything for you, Sandra?
Yeah. Hi. Like my colleague, I will say we have lots of cultural influence from the US and the UK in the RPG. But we are to some European influence. L'Œil Noir, The Dark Eyes, was a very famous RPG in the
world. There is a Kickstarter in English. They are translating it. Yes.
And that's a very classic German game, right?
Yeah, it's a German RPG, and you can love it or hate it, but it wasn't constructed like any other US RPG. And since about last year, we did have some Spanish RPG, because we now have another role-playing games editor who translate from Spanish.
Yeah.
It's La Lutre Rolliste.
Yeah. And this actually, if we're talking about, I think, are we talking about Anima, for example?
Yeah, Anima.
I mean, that's an example. I think it's a Spanish game, right?
Maybe.
But, well, anyway, there's, I can't remember which one, but there's a Spanish game where you're playing.
Yeah, but it's not a good game, so.
There will be.
But I mean, I was just going to say it's been translated in English as
Yeah,
well.
Yeah.
Aqualar is been translated. We will have Hitos. Will be translated, and Black Sad RPG. Black Sad is also a very famous comics book.
French graphic novel that I still haven't read, actually.
Oh, you should, you should. It's really awesome.
Yeah, I heard it was really good.
It's really, really good and matures.
Yeah.
Even if it's with anthropomorphical animals.
Yeah. And it's like it's a noir kind of crime stories, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's it.
Cool.
Kind of all like Humphrey Bogart, Dick Tracy.
Yeah, Dick Tracy, Maltese Falcon, that kind of
yes,
thing.
Yes, sorry.
Yeah. Cool. All right, let's move up to the... I usually finish with, for anybody who's listening, who's familiar with the kind of cooldown questions and asking about... Well, let's do the traditional asking of the ice cream flavors, as in the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. Sandra, do you have a favorite ice cream flavor?
Lemon.
Lemon? Cool. Sorbet, right?
I don't know. Sorbet or gelato.
Okay. Xavier?
My favorite flavor is, rum raisin. I'm sorry, I don't know the English translation.
Rum raisin.
Rum raisin, yes.
Rum, grapes rum.
No, it's literally rum raisin.
Oh, cool.
How about you, Julien?
I don't have one anymore.
Okay.
Because I can't eat ice cream, so.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you stopped. Right.
Yeah, it's full of sugar. So I've stopped eating sugar, so.
Yeah.
Until I find a way to make ice creams without sugar. Actually,
well,
I tried.
I have friends who, and I did some with some friends, the paleo, you can look up the paleo ice cream recipes with coconut milk and really, really dark chocolate. Usually it's very low in sugar, so you can have a look if it's appropriate or not.
Yeah, I could try. I tried once with raspberries, and that was very good. But actually, it was not really an ice cream. It was more than you mix raspberry with a bit of lemon juice and lemon zest, and that's it.
That like, so, granité.
Yeah, more like that. Yes.
Yeah. All right, let me try this because I tried it earlier and we had a conversation with Julia and Greg Stolze, but just in case, maybe you never know, Xavier and Sandra have an interesting answer, but it might be a flop. All right, so just warning everyone. Sandra or Xavier, do you have any memories of an interesting way in which ice cream was brought in a gaming session, and which could be in the game or outside the game?
Oh, yes, I have.
Oh, awesome. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, totally.
I'm impressed.
Oh, no, I have, it was, in a really, really hot summer. Mm-hmm. And I believe the DM was trying to tell him something, like, buy me ice cream, buy me ice cream. And, everyone ever learn about the gelatinous cube, trap. When the brave adventurer walking the room, oh, do you really believe it was a flower? No, it's a gelatinous cube. We did have an ice cream cube. It was a trap too. And my character died by suffocation in an ice cream cube.
That's awesome.
Okay, that's really good. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Thunder. All right, and last question. I usually ask just in crossing references, because sometimes we talk a little bit about marketing, because I work in marketing and branding. Do you guys have either like a favorite advert, memorable favorite advert, which people might know about because it's French, or a favorite brand?
Well, who goes first?
I'd say my favorite brand nowadays maybe is BrewDog.
Okay.
Because I love beer.
Because you love beer. Yeah. So, and what is it, just the flavor of the beer in BrewDog, or is there anything else about them?
That's the BrewDog beers here in France. You can find them in stores, and they were the first IPAs you can find in stores in France.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Yeah. Got it.
The more hop, the happier.
Yeah, they're hoppier, and and it's true that craft beer used to be quite difficult. So it's only recently that you can find more of these kinds of beer in France, and and BrewDog have been developing and expanding like crazy.
Yeah, the hardcore IPA is really good.
Yeah, it's good. Sandra,
a favorite brand.
Either a favorite brand or an advert, advertising that you remember is very memorable.
An advert, I remember a good advert.
Okay.
My favorite advert of all time was for Nolan Cheddar.
Nolan Cheddar?
Yes.
Okay.
It was a little mouse who did, find a large and so nice lump of cheddar, and we did begin to hit that. And unfortunately, the trap failed, and the little mouse was really, really hard, but it wasn't any cheddar, it was some Nolan cheddar. And I believe it was the most nice advert I really did see.
All right, I'll have to check it out. I'll find the video. Oh, thank you. How about you, Xavier?
My favorite ad is the rabbit ad for the Key School.
Double Fake School.
Yes. When you have this father who is dressed in rabbit for his school kid
audience,
and you can hear the kids roaring, rabbit, 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 and when he step out, then the audience change, and it's all hunters with guns, and they're like, rabbit, rabbit, and I love this ad.
Yeah, it's a fantastic ad. The Key School, it's a mint, a brand of mint, they did legendary ads these days. Like, they had several campaigns of them that I really, really enjoyed. I think I have a blog post somewhere about them, which I'll link to. I'll link to the video so you can have a look. It's very visual, so you don't really need to understand French either, so it's pretty clear what's going on.
As soon as you get that rabbit, leper is rabbit, you get it.
Exactly. Yeah. And some another one good ad was, I believe, Orangina Rouge.
Oh, yes.
Like, why? Why is it so bad? Because!
Yes, méchant. Yes, that's a really, really good ad. That's a good series of that. I'll check it. I'll add them as well.
Yes. All right. Some freaky Orangina ads. Like, what's the text? It's, and then off in a... I don't know how you call it in English. Anyway, you'll probably post us the
I'll put the videos
and the Key School ads, please.
Yeah.
Cool. So I'll add your Twitter accounts. And of course, for anybody who might be listening who can listen to this in French, maybe you're in like Quebec or go figure, or you're just anywhere in France, of course, you can find all of us in the next episodes of Les Voix d'Altaride, which I'll link to in the show notes. And it was such a pleasure. Thank you so much, guys, for coming to participate in this episode. I really, really appreciate it. And I really appreciate that you did all of it. You know, this is not your native language, and it really takes something to be speaking in English. And I think you did a fantastic job. So thank you so much. You're really good with it.
Actually, we are quite used to listen to English or read English. Just speaking, we don't have much opportunity.
So thank you to let us practice our English.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great. It's a pleasure to be practicing English. Maybe next time we'll play in English.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that's it. Next step is go to Dragon Meet in London.
Yes, next step. Which this was all training for Dragon Meet in London. You should come out.
Right. Yeah. And actually, we're thinking about making this kind of podcast maybe a regular kind of thing, you know, to let the world know about French games. So
yes.
Maybe.
I think it might be a good idea. We might do another one on, yeah, absolutely, to be discussing French games in more detail. Cool. Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, guys, and have a great evening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Et au revoir à tout le monde.
All right. Another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast wrapping up. I hope you enjoyed listening to this and learned a lot more about French speaking and French role playing games, and my whole crew, well, not my crew, but Julien's crew from the Voices of Altaride that I have a pleasure and honor to contributing to on a regular basis. As I said at the beginning of the episode, just repeating myself in case the stragglers or in case you still hang around, I'm wrapping up the season of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. There's going to be some kind of presents, some kind of things I'm going to be throwing out and like we'll be publishing over the summer. There might be some specials, little things, I don't know. But more importantly, if you would like to participate in a recording with me for the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast, please, please, please give me a shout. You can contact me on Twitter. That's at HippoWell. You can find my details on the website. That's www.icecreamforeveryone.net. You can just email me. That's Willem, W-I-L-L-E-M, at icecreamforeveryone.net. And I think that's about it for now. Yeah, that's about it for now. Have a fantastic day, evening, morning, whatever time it is for you. Have fun. All right. Cheers. Bye.